How the 1980s changed the world. From 24-hour news to consumerism, free markets, wealth disparity and East-West tensions, today's world took its form in the 1980s. Birth of the billionaires.
For better or worse, today's globalized world of billionaires and trillion-dollar corporations has its origins in the early 1980s. It begins with two very different but complementary people. Margaret Thatcher, the British Prime Minister from 1979 to 1990, and Ronald Reagan, the U.S. President from 1981 to 1989. She was a shopkeeper's daughter with strong opinions about the virtues of self-reliance versus government help. He was a former Hollywood actor who believed in free enterprise. They both belonged to a political movement called neoliberalism, or the New Right, which argued that low taxes and minimal regulation of business would create a dynamic, prosperous society. Back then, billionaires like Elon Musk were impossible. That's because from the Second World War to the Thatcher-Reagan Revolution, the rich habitually lost 70 to 90% or more of their income in tax, whether the left or right were in power. But the neoliberalists argued, justifiably, that decades of this economic redistribution had failed to solve society's problems, and it was time to try a new approach. The answer was to free people and businesses to make money and keep it. The rich would then redistribute their income themselves by spending money. This would stimulate the economy, creating many more successful businesses and millions of jobs. Everyone would win. By some standards, they were proved right. Certainly, Britain and America's economies became much more dynamic, and wealth overall increased. But economic disparities have been growing bigger ever since. In the past 2 years, 63% of all new wealth was captured by the richest 1% of the world population. Today's rich can't redistribute their money through spending. There simply isn't enough for them to buy. The dawn of 24-hour news.
Do you ever feel stressed? If so, don't worry. You are in the clear majority of people today. Yet stress was not such a big element of people's lives a generation ago. So, what has changed? Possibly, it began in the USA on the 1st of June 1980, when a new kind of TV channel appeared. A live, 24-hour-a-day news channel called CNN. Before this, newspapers were the primary source of news, read by 80% of people every day in the UK, for example. Many of those people would watch TV news as well, but there were only three channels, each with one news bulletin per evening. News, therefore, rarely happened live. Journalists and editors had time to analyse and interpret events for the public. But CNN introduced a very different culture, one where whatever was happening now was the most important thing. Small things were reported as if they were important. Big things became more vivid, such as people experiencing the Gulf War live on TV. Commentators had to give instant opinions, and with coverage continuing 24 hours a day, constantly find new things to say. Unrecognized at first, an element of hysteria had entered everyone's life. Jump forward to 2023, and in retrospect, an evolution from the 1980s is clear. Firstly, subsequent 24-hour channels, such as America's Fox News, seduced viewers with more provocative, angry styles of reporting. Radio stations went the same way, employing inflammatory hosts known as shock jocks because of their controversial views. When the internet and social networks arrived, everything became immediate. Everyone became a commentator, and the hysteria became absolute. It's not that less happened in 1979 and before. It just happened more calmly. Material boys and girls.
The boy with the cold hard cash is always Mr. Right, Madonna sang in 1985. 'Cause we are living in a material world and I am a material girl. At the time, this was still seen as provocative. Most people in Britain and the U.S. still espoused the social mores of earlier decades. You didn't consume in a conspicuous fashion. And you never talked about how rich you were, because money was a taboo subject. But not for much longer. The economic liberalization of the 1980s, especially in the financial industry, created a generation of people who were making good money. The American and British governments encouraged taking pride in this, because making and spending money was key to their nation's economic renewal after the recessions of the 1970s. So these people started to be proudly consumerist. A new term was used for them: young, urban, or upwardly mobile, professionals, or yuppies. To be called a yuppie was an insult. Some things were seen as ridiculously yuppie forms of conspicuous consumption, such as using one of the mobile phones that had recently been invented. Indeed, by the decade's end, the term yuppie had fallen into disuse because almost everyone was now a young urban professional of some description. The old manufacturing industries were dying, and the best jobs were now in cities, in service industries such as marketing and media. But because such professions don't make anything very tangible, image became all important. You had to look successful to convince others you were good at your job. You dressed the part and appeared confident. Millions of people went on assertiveness training courses to learn to do this. From there, you can trace a direct line to today's culture of selfies and self-affirmation and the glamorous influencer lifestyles publicized through Instagram. Madonna was a prophet of the world to come. Echoes of the Cold War.
When Russian President Vladimir Putin ordered his tanks into Ukraine in 2022, most people's first reaction was, "What's the point of that?" After all, in today's digitized world, the physical space a country occupies is often less important than its intellectual and industrial resources. But in Putin's mind, it is about reversing what happened to Russia decades before. After the 1962 Cuban Missile Crisis nearly ended in nuclear war, the USA and the Soviet Union followed a cautious policy of détente. The two sides were by no means friendly, but they traded with one another and held talks about reducing their nuclear arsenals. When Reagan was elected US president in 1980, however, he was having none of that. For Reagan, communism in general and the Soviet Empire in particular remained a threat that had to be defeated. And he had a plan: to push Russia into an arms race so expensive that its economy would collapse. So, while reducing government expenditure everywhere else, Reagan massively increased America's military budget. This was financed by borrowing vast sums of money. America, in the 8 years of Reagan's presidency, accrued more debt than the nation's entire history until then. The Russians, as predicted, joined the arms race, ruining the Soviet economy. By the end of the decade, the Soviet-controlled countries of Eastern Europe saw the Kremlin's weakness and began to rebel. In 1989, the system collapsed like a deck of cards with the fall of the Berlin Wall. Putin was then a KGB officer posted in Berlin, probably witnessing it firsthand. 2 years later, the Soviet Empire broke up and the Ukrainians seized the chance to declare their independence from Russia. Since then, Putin's greatest desire has been to rectify Russia's national humiliation in the 1980s, and today, we're seeing the result. The rise of radical Islam.
When the American military quit Afghanistan in 2021, the country rapidly fell under the control of the Taliban, an ultra-conservative Islamic political and military organization. Within months, al-Zawahiri, the Egyptian leader of al-Qaeda, the Islamic terrorist organization behind the 2001 attacks on New York's World Trade Center and the Pentagon, returned to the Afghan capital. He was killed there by a U.S. drone strike in 2022. But ask Americans how the Taliban and al-Qaeda became powerful in the first place, and many will blame their country's own spy agency, the CIA, back in the 1980s. What happened was that the Soviet Union invaded Afghanistan in 1979 in an attempt to support a Kremlin-friendly government against a local Islamic rebellion. Following the logic of "the enemy of my enemy is my friend," the CIA backed the rebels with money and arms. Soon, radical Islamists from countries everywhere traveled to Afghanistan to join the fight against the Soviet invaders. By the time Russia retreated 10 years later, those rebel fighters had become organized into groups and were well-armed and battle-hardened. What the CIA didn't anticipate was that the more radical groups would subsequently target the USA itself. The rise of radical Islam is a great deal more complex than that, of course, and began long before the 1980s, but the unintended consequences of that decade are still very much with us today.